Hello, hello, it's Yokai Kajidori here, and on behalf of my business partner and the amazing team here at World Outsourcing Solutions, I want to welcome you to a very special webinar. I'm going to have to start that again, Daniel. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. For some reason, you sound far again. Are you ready now?
Yes, I am.
Perfect. Let's get started. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Enlightened Entrepreneurs. Today's interview is sponsored by World Outsourcing Solutions, where we specialize in helping business owners with all their outsourcing needs and other business growth-related strategies. Today's interview is with a special guest, Daniel Feinman, who I actually interviewed a few weeks ago and found his knowledge on commercial banking worthwhile. And I thought, his knowledge really can transform your business if you are getting started and set you on a path for success. So I'm very thrilled to have Daniel again with us today. Daniel, welcome to the call.
Yokai, thank you very much. I look forward to this.
Incredible. And really appreciate the time you gave us last time, and the level of knowledge you were sharing with our audience was incredible, and I'm actually looking forward to another time with you. So to get us started, Daniel, for those who haven't come across your material or haven't heard about you, would you talk to us about your background, how you got started in business and then in commercial banking?
I'd be happy to. I actually started my very first company when I was 12 years old, manufacturing skateboards by hand. And as most 12-year-olds, I made about every mistake you could, and that business failed. But it actually taught me a fair amount. And then through school, I had the typical jobs. But while I was in high school and then in undergraduate school, I had an opportunity to work for one of the largest check printing companies in the world at the time. So I got about 6 years of manufacturing background, spent 4 years in marketing, particularly with Johnson & Johnson, right. Then got recruited into a commercial bank, believe it or not. And I asked the president of the bank who recruited me, why on earth would you want me with no banking experience to be a banker?
Right.
And he said, because you have great marketing skills and it's much easier to teach a good marketeer banking than it is to try to teach a banker how to sell.
Right.
So I spent about almost 19 years in commercial banking and realized that very early, unless I had some true finance training, that career was not going to be successful. So I went back at night and got my MBA from Pepperdine, with an emphasis in finance, and then left commercial banking 20 years ago this June to start my own consultancy, simply because as a banker, I began to realize near the end of my career, I could not make the kind of difference I felt I wanted to with my clients. So I moved from the world of commercial banking, part of it traditional, part of it non-traditional,
right,
into management consulting, and it was the best single business move I think I ever made.
Incredible. And that has led you to travel to over 26 countries, teaching and consulting with different companies with an incredible revenue levels, some of them ranging from $100 million. What has that journey been like?
It has been fabulous. There's an old song about Auld Lang Syne is actually the title.
Right.
And it's a fan talking to a rock and roller about his career. And he says, the audiences are heavenly, but the traveling is hell. And I will tell you that anyone who has taken more than one international trip between security and everything else will tell you that you would rather not travel 200,000 miles a year in the air if you can avoid it. But having the opportunity to visit countries that I had no idea I would ever be able to has truly been fabulous. From many of the countries in Asia and Europe and the Middle East and Latin America. It's truly been fascinating. And I think that travel definitely is something that everyone should do at least a few times to get an appreciation of different elements in different parts of the world. And you also can actually use it in your business career as you interact and react to people and work with different organizations. Now the world is truly global, and we need to have an appreciation of each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one thing I've grown to admire about you is your ability to break, you know, complicated stuff into very easy to understand stuff, like in our previous conversation. And I'm sure our audience will appreciate that today. Let's talk about some of the learning points you've had during this time. About 20 years now of helping business owners with strategic consulting. What were the highlights? What, the main things that you would like to share with the audience, especially those that are getting started in business?
Well, whether you're starting in business or you're in mid-career, or even if you're late in your career, what I found is we developed a model working with clients and being challenged in different situations over the years that I truly find to be the foundation of much of our work, whether it's strategy, succession, exit strategies, or even finance. And that's what we have named the APICMARE.
Right.
And A for assess, P for plan, C for communicate, I for implement, M for measure, A for adjust, I for improve, and R for repeat. And that model is something we teach all of our clients and is the way we work with them, because too often organizations don't plan. That's well documented. In fact, we published a white paper on that a couple of years ago with a colleague based on our experiences, our research, and the anecdotal information we could come up with. So part of planning is figuring out what you want to plan, whether you're a one-person startup company or you're General Electric or Apple or Saudi Aramco and you're global, you still need a plan. And the challenge that most of us have in planning is not knowing where to begin.
That's right.
That's why we came up with the idea of the assessment. The assessment, and there's a variety of assessment tools, and we refer to about 12 of them in our last book. The assessment tools are to give us an opportunity to objectively, clearly, simply figure out where we are from a staffing standpoint, from a logistics standpoint, from a what we want to do in the future standpoint.
Right.
And once we've assessed whether it's strengths and weaknesses or competitive position or our branding, whatever we're assessing, from there, we should have a clearer picture to create our plan and then go from there. So the model is a foundation of most of the work we do, and our clients really do appreciate it.
Incredible. And if somebody wants to work with you on that type of a model, is there any place they can find these materials?
Actually, there are several places. Of course, they can always go to Amazon and take a look at any of our books, but also they can go to our website and take a look at the tools and examples. And we have YouTube videos up, about almost four dozen now. We have slideshare presentations with some of our tools. We've written a number of books, white papers, articles, podcasts similar to this. So the easiest thing that we tell people is take a quick look at our website. And if you're interested at all, you can always sign up for our free newsletter, and we'll send you some of our most important podcasts and videos on a periodic basis.
Incredible. Most of our audience in that startup phase, Daniel, looking back in your career as an entrepreneur, are there any things that helped you to stay the course now that you've been in the business for yourself for 20 years that you would like to share with our audience today?
Most definitely. One of the first things that I learned many, many years ago was the idea of the mastermind group.
Mastermind
and
group.
Most people, I think, have heard of the book, whether they've read it or not, called Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. And the book was actually published back in the 30s, but it has been republished and translated many, many times. And in there is a concept called the mastermind group, which is effectively, we are all smarter than any one of us is smart. So the idea is to gather a group of people together that are not competitors, where we can candidly share some of our challenges and some of our questions. It's a peer review group, for lack of a better term.
Absolutely.
And get input. And my mastermind groups over the years that I've been involved with have been some of the best relationships, some of the best advice I could possibly get because of the way it's set up. It's non-competitive, it's mutually supportive. We're all there for the same reasons. And that certainly would be one thing that I would strongly encourage people to do.
Absolutely. Now, if somebody really wants to do that and they don't know where to get started, where would you point them to?
Right now, it's probably the easiest thing to do is literally go to the internet and put in mastermind groups. And what you will generally find is a number of links to groups all over the place. Frequently, you can actually find one either in your industry or in your local geography. But I also encourage people to leverage social media, whether you're on Facebook or LinkedIn or any of the other social media platforms. Put a request out. Say, who's involved in a local mastermind group? And if you want it face-to-face versus virtual, you can set those out. And usually within a day, you'll get enough responses either inviting you to a local group or asking you some of the pre-screening questions to see if it's a fit, or gathering people of like mind who may want to start one.
Absolutely.
That's pretty easy these days.
Absolutely. In my experience, Daniel, because of the podcast that we do, we've managed to put together individual business owners who are doing things in their own right from different parts of the country, of the world, so to speak, that we get to do mastermind group once a week, but with different groups, and people can reach out for that. Now, we have spoken about mastermind group. Is there anything else that helped you in those early years of doing business that you would highly recommend startups to focus on?
I definitely would. And that would be to put together either a formal or an informal advisory board separate from your mastermind group. Mastermind is more of a peer review group. An advisory board are the most important professionals either in your life or that should be in your life,
right,
to help guide you in your business. And I always say you need a good commercial banker, a good commercial insurance broker, a good business attorney. Not that we want to be in court all the time, but to help us prevent making some of the mistakes that will lead to problems. So if you have your banker, your insurance broker, your attorney, and your accountant on board, then get one other outside professional to balance this out. And over the years, not only for my practice, but for most of the early stage businesses that I have worked with and consulted to, it has been truly invaluable. Because, of course, your banker is going to look at things differently than your accountant or your lawyer or your insurance broker. But those four professionals will help you make the right business decisions on those elements that are so critical that are outside of the expertise that you and I have. So
awesome.
That's pretty important.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Now, looking back, if you were to do things all over again, Daniel, knowing what you know today, what would be the number one thing that you say, I would definitely focus on this more than I would have focused on everything else?
If we're looking at our individual practices, our individual companies,
yes,
two things I would have done differently. Number one is I would have left commercial banking earlier,
right,
and started my consulting practice. But two, which is maybe even more important, is I would have focused much earlier on really understanding my business as a business.
Right.
Too often companies, particularly startups, you've got smart people with a great idea and they start a business without really having a plan, without understanding their sustainable competitive advantage, without recognizing where they are in the competitive landscape, the life cycle of the industry, how to budget, because everything, of course, is going to cost more than we plan.
That's right.
All receivables will take much longer to collect than we think they will. We are not the one answer to the world's question that we would love to think we are. So really understanding the process of what we have put into the Epicmare, but the process of understanding our business, our position, how to run a company.
Right.
Because that's so different from just having a great idea, a great product, or a great service. And the quick example I will use is many of us think that attorneys have to be successful because you see them on TV and you see them driving their fancy cars, etc. But I will tell you from both my banking experience and my consulting experience that unfortunately a fair number of lawyers and accountants and doctors struggle to keep their practices open because as bright and as focused as they are in their specialty, in their training, no one taught them how to run a business.
Right.
And that's very important.
Incredible. Incredible. This is so revealing. Now, let's say, you know, switch gear for a moment. You know, we will come back to you know, the advisory body, you know, and the commercial banking, which is your area of expertise. Talking to somebody who is starting out, what sort of a mindset do they need to have for them to withstand the rigor of the journey, you know, the the surprises?
Oh, my goodness. That's a really a fabulous question because, again, so many people, when they're going to start a company, don't think of those kinds of questions. It's very important to have the right mindset. Your words are exactly correct.
Right.
To understand that everything that's going to make this company successful is on your shoulders.
Right.
So you can't just jump and say, all right, I'm going to start selling X because the world may not want to buy X, or at least the way you're packaging it. So it's absolutely critical to go through a process. And I strongly encourage people, particularly pre-startup, startup, early phase, to engage a professional. Depending on what your budget is, depending on where you are in your particular industry, there's a lot of different resources around that either at no cost or low cost that can at least get you the fundamentals of creating a real plan. And your plan is more than a financial plan. It's more than an operating plan. It's more than a marketing plan. But it does encompass all three of those. And creating a real budget as part of this is something that most people hate, let's be honest. Most people don't like numbers. But it is so critical to understand cash flow in and cash flow out.
That's right.
And planning it and looking at sources, because if nothing else, that tells you how much money you're going to need to start. and what your price should be, or price is if you have different tiers or different services.
Right.
And then working with your cash budget to actually plan each week how much cash should be coming in and how much cash is going out. And if you need an operating line of credit, there, that tells you right then that you need to sit down with your lender, your banker, show them your forecast, show them your projections, tell them why they should loan you the money that you need. You also, in that process, can determine whether you can finance your startup on your own or whether you're going to need to bring in equity partners.
That's right.
And there are literally 500 different ways to finance an organization. Many of those are, think of mom and dad, where you go to family members to get the initial capital you need. All of these are some of the most critical steps in being successful, and also understanding the odds. Traditionally, 2 out of 3 new companies don't make it past their first year.
Right.
And about 90% of companies don't make it past 5 years. So you want to be aware of this. You want to determine and validate that your idea, your product, your service, your way of doing this can be successful, and the projections will help you with that.
Incredible.
And getting professional advice will help you with that.
Absolutely, especially right in the beginning before you mess the whole thing up.
Very, very true. But you also mentioned something earlier that I think is critical that a lot of people also forget. And that is having the commitment and the discipline,
right,
to not only do these things, take these steps before you actually start your company,
right,
but also the long days, the decisions that fall on your shoulders, the continuing to work through issues as they come up. Because if you're starting a new company, whether you're on your own or you've got a couple of partners, the position you're in is very different than if you're working for a decent-sized firm.
That's right.
All of the decisions are on your shoulders, and you have to get up in the morning and you have to figure out how I'm going to solve this problem, how I'm going to prevent the next issue, because all of the people that work with you and for you are depending on your correct decisions for their paycheck.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me take you back to those early days, Daniel. You have just left the commercial banking. You getting started on your own. How did you get the initial client?
Begging, pleading, and stealing. It wasn't quite that challenging, but it was very difficult.
Right.
I made almost every mistake I could make when I first started my firm.
Right.
And this is one of the reasons that I'm so adamant about helping young new companies avoid some of those same problems. We were very fortunate in the fact that we literally had a full office built in our house. The people we had bought our home from had already done that. So that was our headquarters. But when I left commercial banking, I had no plan, no clients, no prospects, and no money.
one of my mentors put it this way: the 3 C's. You don't have cash, you don't have credibility, and you don't have customers.
Absolutely true. And somehow, in spite of that, we didn't file for bankruptcy.
Incredible.
But the true answer is, when I left and realized that I had not planned for this appropriately, I did go into a little bit of a panic mode.
Right.
But once I got my feet on the ground and my wife and my family were completely behind me, we had a series of conversations, and I looked at my database. I looked at who I knew in business and said, what can I do immediately generates revenue? And I knew that I had been teaching on and off for many years. So I approached a couple of organizations that I felt needed some training and teaching in the world of strategy and finance. We had a conversation, I convinced them. They happen to have some availability. So I literally started teaching and training as the very first way to generate revenue.
Incredible.
The good news about that is because of the kinds of organizations these were, it gave me exposure to the kinds of small companies that needed a little bit of consulting. Now, the challenge with most small and startup companies is, even if we appreciate the value of training, we don't have the money for consulting.
That's right.
So what we were able to do then is, just a moment, please. I'm sorry. What we were able to do is, because of that exposure, get a couple of these clients who were willing to pay for a little bit of consulting.
Right.
That's all they could appreciate. That's all they could afford. That's right. And that little bit of consulting and the training, and then we started to write an article here and contribute to a chapter in a book over there. It started to build. The marketing to the public, the marketing to our target audience of what we were doing is what really started that domino effect, if you will, of right. one leading to the next, leading to the next.
Right. What I love about that story really is exactly what we have done and what many of my experts that I get to interview on this have done, teaching, setting yourself apart as an expert. You know, and then providing consultations, you know, and all that goes with it, really makes you appear as an expert and also be able to reach out to more people. And I recommend our audience to, you know, to do exactly the same way, because it works. It worked for you and is working even today.
Most definitely. It's when I started teaching at the university level, which goes back to 1990, I teach corporate finance over at UCLA Extension. Part of the challenge that they give you on the front end, they want to know how dedicated you are, how much you really want to teach, what your passion is. And I said, effectively, I'm a lifelong learner.
Incredible.
And it's something that we all have to commit ourselves to, because the world has never stopped evolving. Sometimes I think we forget that it does. But in every industry, things continue to change. And unless we're constantly aware of reading, going to conferences, having conversations with peers and mentors, we might lose sight of the next step we need to take in our business to satisfy our clients, who are, of course, evolving.
That's right.
So I not only teach on a regular basis, go to conferences and I read. In fact, my wife says I have the world's most boring library. I have 1,000 books on strategy, finance, and leadership.
Incredible.
And she, every once in a while when I'm going on a trip, she'll sneak a novel into my luggage just so I have something else to read.
I think, you know, that is a mark of a successful leader, because leaders, they know their area of specialty, expertise, and they focus on it, you know, day in. I was reading John Maxwell's book. I'm not so sure if you're familiar with him, but he said, if you want to be successful, take in something, you know, on your particular subject daily, be it for, you know, half an hour or an hour, however long you have, you become a master in whatever you're doing straight away. Now, Daniel, let's dive into the commercial banking. You know, we have covered quite a lot of things, but I know your specialty is banking, and you help people who are actually going to be using that particular services. In your experience of working in commercial banking and also helping people, what are the key areas you think business setup need to understand and how can they go about it?
Every business needs financing of some sort.
Right.
Every bank needs to loan money.
That's right.
So you would think it's natural that every business can go into any bank and get the money they need. It's not quite that simple.
Right.
What every business, particularly young businesses, need to understand is, number one, banks truly do need to loan money, but you need to help them understand that they should loan it to you and that you can pay it back.
Right.
So part of that is educating yourself on the local commercial banks, because most of us, particularly in a startup mode, are going to deal with local banks rather than out of the area banks.
Right.
Because not all banks are the same. This was one of the first things I learned when I was a commercial banker many years ago. Different banks have different areas of focus. Part of it might be because of regulations. A quick example is a bank that has too heavy a focus on real estate. The regulators may have literally come in and said, you should not make any more real estate loans for the next 2 years. Focus on other types of loans like equipment loans, etc. Well, if you're looking for a real estate loan, right now, that's not a commercial bank that is going to help you because right. they can't.
That's right.
Other times, you'll find that banks, for their own purposes, have a heavier emphasis in one particular area or another, or one size. I have a client right now, relatively young company, growing, has all the right pieces of their puzzle, except they're not in a position to borrow enough from most commercial banks.
Right.
Because different banks have different loan sizes. So for this particular client, I'm having to find them banks that are truly on the smaller end of their loan portfolio.
Right.
What does a bank want to loan on? What are their loan limits?
Okay, before we jump onto that, Daniel, let me take you back to what you mentioned. You know, educate yourself in what your local banks, you know, are focusing on. Where do you get that information if, say, you're in the U.S. or you're over here in the U.K. from your experience?
Well, it's terribly, terribly challenging because all you have to do is go to the bank's website.
Right.
I mean, literally, today, the easiest thing is to pull up their website, and in most cases, they're going to tell you right on their landing page exactly what services they're providing, what size loans they're looking for, over X, below Y, whether they do residential loans, commercial loans, business loans, secured loans, unsecured. All of that today is on most banks' websites. The alternative is, again, since we're talking about local, walk into the branch.
Beautiful.
Take a brochure off the wall or grab one of the lenders sitting behind the desk and say, tell me in 5 minutes what you're looking for in an ideal client, what size loans you make. And it is that fast.
Incredible, incredible. Yes, it sounds so obvious, but oftentimes business owners miss the most obvious thing, and they, you know, they end up going elsewhere where they, you know, somebody has to do that for them, and of course they charge them for that simple service. Okay, I will let you go ahead. You were about to say another important aspect to the whole process.
Well, just going back, if you understand what the bank is focusing on, and you understand the size of the loans they want to make, and if that happens to match what you're looking for, it goes to something we were talking about earlier as far as planning. And did we mention the five P's earlier?
No, not today. I would love to ask to mention that again, because it was very, very important the other time we were together.
Well, this is a key concept, and I would love to take credit for it, but I heard someone else use it a number of years ago, and I have borrowed it and relayed it numerous times. And that is living by the five P's. That's proper planning, prevents poor performance. And any young company, any young entrepreneur, even a growing company, needs to remember this. We have to plan so that we get the result that we're looking for. So understanding that banks not only want to, but have to loan money to stay in business. The real right. question is, will they loan it to me or not? So you prepare yourself. You go through your budgeting, your forecasting, your projection process that we mentioned earlier to determine how much financing you need and what kind. And of course, there's basically two types of financing for most businesses. That would be a revolving line of credit for your working capital, that's your short-term needs, right. that's repay cash flow, versus a term loan for your longer-term capital and growth needs, and those are repaid through profits. So your own projections are going to tell you how much you need and what type. Right. Then also, you want to make sure that you write down on your loan application or a piece of paper how much you need. Never ask the banker how much right. you can borrow. That means you don't know what you need. Tell the banker exactly how much you need. There's the amount. The use of that money. How they're going to get repaid. And you not only want to have that main source of repayment, but banks are always looking for at least a secondary source of repayment. And it wouldn't hurt to have a tertiary or a third form of repayment.
Right.
Now, most people say, well, no. My first form of repayment will always work. Well, I will tell you, in all of my commercial banking days and all of my consulting days, plans sometimes don't work out. So we need that secondary source of repayment to make the bank comfortable that if things don't go according to plan, and they almost never do, of course, but they'll still get paid. You also want to provide them a list of any tangible collateral that you're willing to provide, right. a cosigner or guarantor if the business doesn't have at least 3 consecutive profitable years that justify the loan on itself.
Right.
Those are really the basics.
Incredible. I'm learning as much, as I'm sure audience are learning in the process. That's why sometimes I'm a little bit slow in answering, asking another question, because I'm taking notes. And I'm hoping if you are in our audience today, you are taking notes on what Daniel is saying. Because these are some of the critical things. May sound so simple, but easily forget, you can forget them. But if you can remember them and implement in your business, it could mean the difference of either getting that particular loan or not getting that particular loan. Because every time you do that, they're going to check up on you, and it's time consuming. So, apply what you're learning here today. Daniel, we have touched quite a few steps here. Number one, being educate yourself, and we've also touched just now, what you need to fill in on the forms and everything else. What other preparation do business owners need to have in place before they actually go out to a commercial banker?
Your projections, your financial statements, your history, the bios or CVs of the principals, an identification of your target market, your sustainable competitive advantage, why you're going to be successful moving forward. And this is particularly important in the very early stages or even a startup.
Right.
Because most people think that commercial banks are the place to go for financing. And in many cases, they are, but banks charge on a relative basis the lowest rates for their loans because they take the least amount of risk.
Right.
So part of our responsibilities as business owners, as principals, is to create the story, to create the understanding in the mind of the banker that we really will be more successful in the future than we are today. And we are going to use the money appropriately, and we are going to be able to repay them.
Right.
And so if we're a startup or very early stage, we may have the track record in this business that they want to see. We don't have three consecutive profitable years of growth, right, and many startups, of course, or early stage firms won't, then we're going to need a stronger story on the rest of what they're looking for.
Right.
So what is the management team? What is their experience? What is their financial strength? How are we truly going to market to the world? Who our clients are? There's a recent situation where a company had good news and bad news the same day. Right. Good news is they finally sold a very large order to Walmart, the largest retailer in the world. The bad news is they finally sold a very big order to Walmart. The problem was that they needed a tremendous amount of cash to be able to build out the product to deliver on time. The right. amount of money that they wanted to borrow was much, much more than they could normally justify. So they right. went to the bank and they presented their case and they said, look, this is Walmart, where our future is secure. And the banker looked at them and says, what if Walmart changes their mind? What if they postpone the order? What if they cancel the order? What if they pay you 60 days late? And the principals of the company had never thought of those things. And right. they literally would have run out of cash. And then the banker, of course, had one other concern. This order would make Walmart about 35% of the total revenue of this company.
Right.
In banking, that's called concentration. That is always a negative because that puts so much of your future in the hands of a single client that if anything goes wrong, you may literally be out of business.
Absolutely, makes a lot of sense. Let me take you back to where you mentioned about the history that you know, the banker will look at the history. Suppose one of the business owners in our audience hasn't had a good history, but they have a very good proposal. Maybe they've been running the business for 2 years, profitable, and they can show that you know they also have the good management in place. What can they do to make their history better so that the bank can look at them more favorable?
What we all would love to do is have a perfect history and a perfect future. And as soon as you figure out that formula, please let me know. You're presenting a very common scenario that a lot of small companies, young companies face. Reality is, if I've been in business for 2 years, I cannot pretend I've been in business for 10 years.
Right.
But in those 2 years, if you break down your story and explain why you started the firm, where you started, and how you've built it to this point, at least you have 2 years of history. You're not just a startup. So you have that to your benefit. What you also want to immediately do is then add your projections, your forecast for the coming years, and not just, I hope this happens, but here is my plan. This is why it will happen. This is the research I've done. These are the assumptions that I have validated. That story that is justified for the future is as important as what we've done in the past. And I always recommend to people before sitting down with their banker, again, is to make sure that you're convinced yourself that right. this is something that you can do and why. So that research, that questioning the assumptions, that validating or proving out that the assumptions are reasonable.
And please, a quick side note, do not go to the banker and tell them that your projections are conservative. Of course they're conservative.
Right.
You have to go in with reasonable assumptions or the banker's going to throw you out.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely. Well, this is very, very good. You know, I'm taking notes, like I said, and it's quite helpful. That business owners needs to take when it comes to you know, working with commercial banks or getting loans and all that you know, related subjects we'll be talking about, that you feel our audience needs to be familiar with.
Yes, everybody really needs to understand the seven C's of credit.
Right, seven C's of credit. Let's hear them. I love the acronyms.
Well, you start with cash flow.
Right.
Does the business have the cash flow to repay the loan they're requesting? And that may sound rather silly, but it's really not. It's the very first test that a banker looks at. Has the business shown in the past, through their history, the ability to create enough cash flow to repay this type of loan? If the answer is no, then the business owner better have an explanation for that. And if it has, that's the good news. Now the projections moving forward, do they truly show that there's enough cash flow to repay?
Right.
And I bring this up partially because when I was a commercial banker, I ran into this on occasion where someone would come in with their loan request and yet their own projections showed that they weren't going to create enough cash flow to repay the loan.
Right.
So you stop right there and go, you're asking me to loan you, let's say, $500,000. And the payments are $10,000 a month, let's say. But your cash flow is $7,000 a month. How are you going to repay me? And I literally had a business owner sitting across from me look me straight in the eye and say, oh, don't worry about the projections. We'll make the payments. I was shocked.
I bet you were.
Yes. The second C is credit. Does the business have a credit history of paying their obligations on time? That's number one. Number two, do the principals behind the company have good credit histories? Those are both very important because every lender is going to not only look at the business itself and does it have a history of paying its obligations, but let's look at the principals. If the company has made its payments, but you have two or three owners and they have a history of a lot of late payments, that gets the lender uncomfortable. That what happens if things aren't perfect? Are these people going to step up and make sure I get paid?
Right.
So credit is absolutely critical. Collateral is the next C, and is tangible physical collateral. A piece of equipment, a building, vehicles. What tangible collateral, if any, can you pledge to the lender as a secondary source of repayment to make them more comfortable that if you can't make the process agreed and if you can't work something out, that they have some asset that they can acquire and liquidate to use to repay them.
Right.
Very important. And not that every organization is necessarily going to have collateral, but if you have some, you must be willing to pledge it because you're asking the bank to give you money and hope to get repaid.
Right.
You as the business owner are getting all the upside benefit, so you have to be willing to pledge collateral if you have it.
Right.
The next C is character. And this surprises a lot of people. Character is that intangible inside each of us that says when things don't go as planned, I will still make sure the bank gets paid. It's right. the most difficult to measure, and yet it's the most important. And it's something that the banking industry, for as long as I have known, has been trying to find a way to measure, because you can have all the other C's you want, but if somebody decides they're not going to live up to their obligation, it creates a problem.
Right. I've got a question with that, Daniel. How then do the bank decide, the character, that this is a good character? Or how can they tell that this person has a character if you can't measure it?
That's a great question, and it's a question that the banking industry has been asking itself for as long as I can remember.
Right.
But part of it, UK, actually goes to meeting somebody, to looking them in the eye, to being around their business with them, to spending time with them, and you get a sense of somebody's sincerity and commitment.
Right.
It's not perfect, but when I was a young banker being trained, and I was being trained by, I think, the oldest banker alive, he referred to it as banker's gut.
Right.
It's the feeling you get in your stomach when something isn't quite right.
Right.
And so part of the reason that a commercial banker, once they're interested in your loan request, usually wants to come to your business is they want to look you in the eye. They want to see you in your environment. They want to see how you run your business.
Right.
And you can tell a lot about an organization, the culture of the organization, and to some degree the character, by how an operation is run, how the people react to each other within the organization. And in a series of conversations over time, that's when you really do get a sense for somebody's character.
Incredible. Let's talk about the next C's that you have set us up for.
Well, one of them, believe it or not, is common sense.
Common sense.
And this is an example of, you look at a company, and the company has a 6-year history. And for the first 5 years of the company, they lost money. And now they're coming to you, and what they want is a very large loan that is much bigger than they have ever had before, and much bigger than their history says they can pay off.
Right.
So let's make it even better. Let's say that you've got a company that has just broken even for several years, and now they want to borrow $10 million with payments of $50,000 a month. That doesn't make sense.
No.
And that's really what we're talking about, is what seems reasonable under the circumstance.
Right.
So that's the common sense element. And that's something that, it's amazing to me, the number of people that will come in, particularly young companies, that have not put the time in to make the kind of forecast that they really need to.
Right.
To answer the question on their own. And so they come in asking for a number that is not reasonable, and not realizing that that's part of the problem. Again, if we remember that the bank wants to loan money, you have to give them a reason to loan you the money. And so when you ask for a number that is so much larger than what your history has shown you can repay, you really have to very quickly be able to explain that. And there could be times where you've got an unusually good situation that's coming up, and you finally found your secret sauce or your stride, and now you have a much bigger need. That does happen. But that's where we go back to what we talked about earlier, which is making good, solid forecasts and building that story to explain to the banker. Because in addition to, does this make sense? Well, then we get to the point, and this is one of the most important, is the compassion of the banker. I know what you're thinking. Yukai, you're thinking, banker? Compassion? No. But it really is true. The banker that you deal with, when you've laid out your history, your current situation, your projections, your story, the other sees, they need to write up an analysis and go into the loan committee.
Yes.
And plead your case. Try to get your loan request approved. And if they don't believe in you and your request, guaranteed it's going to be turned down.
Right.
So that,
you can see how that is.
And then the only other C we talk about is capacity, which really is, if things don't go according to plan, what's your backup plan, your plan B? That's why we said earlier, what's your secondary source of repayment?
Incredible. Incredible. What's your backup? Awesome. We really appreciate you taking your time to be with us here. I know many people would want to connect with you at some level. And if they want to do that, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, I would love to talk to them. A couple of very easy ways. They can just go to our website, which of course is builditbackwards.com. They can sign up for our free newsletter. They could send us an email at info@builditbackwards.com. And they can always go to YouTube, SlideShare, Amazon, look at our videos, our podcasts, our articles, and get a sense for it. But I would love to talk to them, because I regularly have people who have worked with me either on the training or the consulting side, sometimes a year or two or 3 years later, who call me up and say, Daniel, I have a question about, or could you explain something?
Right.
And I'm happy to.
Yes. Today we didn't touch about the name of your company, Build It Backwards. Would you kindly share one or two things about that and how you got that name and how you're helping business owners, you know, in line with, what your company is about?
I'll be happy to. When I first started my company, again, I had no plan, and I came up with truly an awful name.
Right.
It was just because I really had not put a lot of thought into it. And my advisory board a while back kept pushing me to change the name from what it was to Build It Backwards.
Right.
And I kept resisting, and in one meeting, several of them basically verbally pushed me up against the wall and said, why are you resisting this? This is the way you work. And when I stopped for a second and thought about it, I knew they were right. So we changed the name, because we literally, when we work with a company, and we mentioned the Pickmere model earlier, a basic tenet that we always work with is you start with the end in mind. What's your perfect horizon? What's your vision? So whether we're talking about financial modeling, whether we're talking about strategic or succession or exit planning, what do you want the perfect result to be?
Right.
That's where we start. From that point, we turn around and create a success roadmap from there back to today, because you look at things very differently when you're at some point in the future coming back to today.
That's right.
So that was really the concept behind it. It was without a doubt the best single marketing move I ever made. Because I literally will be working somewhere, and when I introduce myself or I get introduced to come up, people know the name of the company even if they don't know me.
That's right.
There's a bicycle shop that I go to on occasion, and when I go to check out, the guy behind the counter says, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, but you're that Build It Backwards guy, aren't you?
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Well, Daniel, on that note, we really have to respect your time, and we certainly would love to have you back, especially to talk about, you mentioned earlier on about, you know, the 500 ways, you know, to finance your operations. We certainly would love to have you talk about that at some point when you have time, and our audience would certainly enjoy that, I'm sure. Are there any last words you would like to share with our audience before we say goodbye when it comes to business or commercial banking, whichever you you want to communicate to our audience?
What I'd like to leave everyone with is to please remember that a bank is like any other tool. If you use it properly, it can truly benefit you. But if you use it incorrectly, it can definitely hurt you.
Right.
And it surprised me when I was a young banker going through my training, and I had the benefit of training with a couple of very large international banks early on, they seem to concur with something that outside of banking, bankers normally don't admit. And that is a banker can actually hurt you in three ways. Number one, giving you the wrong structure of your finance, giving you a term loan when you need a revolving line. That's number one. Number two is giving you too much money. So believe it or not, you get overextended, don't know how to use the money, and then fail.
Right.
Or three, not as much as you actually need, so you only get part of the way down your road and you're hamstrung.
That's right.
And the bankers generally have good intentions, but sometimes misinterpret your information and can then fall into one of those three traps. So this is why I strongly recommend every company to know more about your business than your banker does, to truly understand your forecast and projections so that you feel very strongly that you can achieve at least a minimum of X, and use that to build your case, to educate your banker, and then tell them exactly what you need, as we said earlier. How much, what type, repayment, collateral. You tell them what you need, and you're about 80 to 90% of the way towards an approval because you're giving them the information that they need to say yes. And that's important.
Incredible. Incredible. Thank you again, Daniel Feynman, for a great interview. And I'm sure all our business owners in our audience have a much clearer understanding of the necessary steps they need to take in order to succeed with their commercial banking and their business in general. Can I invite you also to visit Daniel's website, which is www.buildit.com, and you can get in touch with him from there, or alternatively look at his social media. You just type in Daniel Feynman and you'll be able to reach out to him. Once again, thank you so much, Daniel, for spending your time with us here. We appreciate the contribution you've done to the entrepreneur community, especially here in the United Kingdom, and of course in the US, Australia, and Canada, where many of our audience are based. With that said, have a great day, everyone. I look forward to another episode with you at some time very, very soon.